radio stuff for Christmas and New Year's. Go. Oh, this is a little festive. I like this. I can get into this. But it's not just a Christmas show, so let's do the original opening too. Go. Wherever you go.
Just take a lively companion wherever you go. Take a portable radio. Take a portable radio.
All right, the Radio Stuff Show, episode 83. This is our 49th episode this year. I try to do one every week, but apparently we are three short. Hello there, I'm Larry Gifford, radio consultant and talent coach at LarryGifford.com. This is the final episode of 2014. Savor it. This is a weekly show about radio, for radio. You can find all 83 episodes at RadioStuffPodcast.com. We're also on iTunes and TuneIn and Stitcher and wherever you download your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at The Radio Stuff. It's all the rage. People are doing the social media thing. Our top story today, it's the holidays. Breaking news. No, it is the holidays, and many radio stations break normal programming for holiday music or fundraisers, toy drives, radio plays, and other specialty programming. There's a lot of great things going on, a lot of people helping people. I think it's terrific how radio kind of, you know, hugs their community this time of year. One such endeavor, kind of a strange programming option, but it caught my eye, so I want to talk about it. It's a 10-hour production, of Tolstoy's War and Peace. Yeah, on BBC Radio 4. It's going to be New Year's Day, and they're going to add a little something extra, which this is where I'm like, oh, that's kind of clever. The BBC Radio 4 digital team will be live tweeting right along with the program. What an undertaking. So Rhianne Roberts is the digital editor at the BBC Radio 4, and she joins us now via Skype to chat about the project. Rhianne, welcome to the Radio Stuff Podcast.
Hi, Larry. Nice to speak to you.
So I'll start with the question that I understand you've asked yourself a couple of times. Tolstoy, really?
I know. It's one of those things that you can kind of see it out of the corner of your eye, and it's this massive book, 1,200 pages, and you think, yeah, that's great. I'm sure it's a really good book, but it's not for me. I just haven't the time. But still, you feel slightly guilty. It's like not eating the right sort of cereal or not drinking enough water. You know you'd be better if you tackled it. So when the Radio 4 drama team announced that they were doing this, I thought, right, this is our moment. We will do our very best to engage with this book and to make it relevant for a new generation of readers and listeners.
So where did the idea to live tweet the dramatization come from?
I think it was me in a moment of madness. There was one experiment over here that you might have heard of, which was when the Greater Manchester Police Force, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, they decided they would tweet every single thing that came into their police station over a 24-hour period. So that was everything from minor traffic offences to domestic incidents to crimes that were of a more serious nature. And it was a fascinating sort of blow-by-blow day with the Greater Manchester Police Force. And that stayed in my mind as an interesting experiment on Twitter. And I thought, what if we tried to live tweet this massive book and represent it in a digital space and say, well, it's worth having another look at this. We're going to see how interesting we can make it. And we started talking to an independent company over here run by David Schneider, who has a reputation on Twitter as one of the better comedic writers. But he's also a really thoughtful, well-read man. And his independent company and I started talking about how could we produce something in Twitter which wasn't just a blow-by-blow account of the novel, because that would be quite tricky and probably quickly become quite tiresome. What if we created something that was more of a playful companion that drew you in through infographics, battle plans, maps, interesting stuff about the ephemera that was around Tolstoy's period? What if we took that and presented that alongside the drama as it's played out on the radio?
So how big is your team to create all this?
We're tiny. We're working with David Schneider's team. So they are helping us write and design what will happen on Twitter. And then there will be me and a couple of the producers who've been working on it, and we'll be in the building on New Year's Day with one of our colleagues from the Indie, and we will do this thing together.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, from your past experiences of digital content creation, what have you learned about what works well on Twitter?
I think for us, we have to hold at the center of what we do the quality that Radio 4 aspires to. So what we're trying to do is to give an impression on a different platform of the radio station itself. So it's not Radio 4 just transposed into a digital space, but it takes the qualities of Radio 4 and then tries to reproduce them in a way that people who use social media and 140 characters and links to interesting places are used to. I don't know if that quite makes sense. I mean, we wouldn't go on there and be incredibly flippant and incredibly throwaway with what we're doing, but we have to have a sense of that playfulness around this content that is so weighty and important to make it feel both right for Twitter, right for Radio 4 audiences that will find us there, and to be appealing to anybody who might come across us who hasn't tried Radio 4 before. So it's quite a tricky balancing act, but once you find the tone and you start to try things out in the space, the great thing about Twitter is that you can find out really easily what's working for that audience, and you can build on that quite quickly.
Now, what surprised you most about preparing for this?
Oh, goodness me. I think what surprised me most is actually how accessible the book is. You know, there's a reason why it's one of the greatest novels of all time. And that's because it's actually a really, really good book. So I'm quite into it now, and I resent having to put it down. And I never thought I would say that. But the moments that are dramatic in it are moving and timeless. And they really do stay with you. So it sounds terribly public service, and maybe that's why I work for the BBC, but I think it's part of our duty to try and put this in front of people and say, look, it's really worth sticking with this. Here's a nice, easy way into it. Can we tempt you to engage with it on Twitter, then maybe try it on the radio? And it's not only one set piece on New Year's Day. We're repeating it weekly as a 10-part series going out through January and February and into March. So we'll reuse all those Twitter assets that we've made alongside the program as we repeat it. So we're offering, there's no escape from this massive book, Larry.
So now your target demo or your target listener for BBC Radio 4 is traditionally on the upper end of the age scale. Do you expect them to interact with the Twitter, or is this for a different audience altogether?
Well, an awful lot of Radio 4 listeners are active in social media. They're on Facebook and they're on Twitter. The question for us, or the challenge for us, is can we persuade you to engage with your radio companion in a different space? And we have success with some things. I mean, for example, on our morning breakfast show this morning, they had a new story by the author of the Paddington Bear books. Mm-hmm. And we presented that voiced by Hugh Bonneville, the actor from Downton Abbey, who you'll be familiar with. And we presented a transcript of that story as a PDF. And we said that's available on our breakfast show website. And it may be that that sort of thing tempts our traditional radio listeners to go there and to have a look. So it's about, as I said before, it's about taking the content that you know has real worth and representing it in the digital space to tempt your core audience into those spaces as well. So we know they're active on digital spaces because everybody is. So it's about making it worthwhile for them to make the journey from their radio to their mobile, to their tablet, to their PC, and to find some of the extra content we want to offer them.
So when all this is done and you get a chance to take a breath, How do you define if it's a success?
Well, I tell you what, it's been successful already. We had a fantastic moment in the office earlier in the week where we'd hired some costumes from our National Theatre Company over here because we needed to take some photos to create. So you can guess what happened next. Suddenly, we're all sitting in front of our computers dressed up as Tolstoy heroines and feeling very, very pleased with our working day. So, I mean, we've already had fun with it as a team. And I hope that by the time we get to the other end of whether it's the 2nd of January or the middle of March and audiences have had a go at this great novel, that they will have had some pleasure in it. Even if they only saw 3 or 4 tweets and laughed out loud, you know, that will have been a success.
Do you have a favorite tweet or two that you can't wait for it to be sent out?
Well, the first one's quite good. It's, I think I can't, I mean, from memory, it says something like Happy New Year. And we mean 1864 here, not 2015.
Great. And how can people follow along on New Year's Day?
Well, they can look for BBC Radio 4 on Twitter. The whole of the feed will be devoted to War and Peace from, I think we start broadcasting at around 10 in the morning. So, yes, you'll have to start in the middle of the night. But yeah, if you go to the Radio 4 website, we'll be scooping it all up into a live blog. So you can go back and follow all the action through the day. And we'll be pulling in all sorts of infographics and photos and stuff there to keep people entertained.
And special hashtags for the day?
Yes, it's hashtag War and Peace.
Okay, great. All right. Hashtag War and Peace. I wish you the best of luck. This is really exciting. I think this is actually a great model for radio stations around the world of how they can incorporate social media as a second screen for what they're doing on the radio. So great job.
Thanks, Larry. Stand by for the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Everybody's voting for the friendly voice. A radio, the people's choice. East Coast, West Coast, in between, it's radio that makes the scene.
Oh, very special treat for the holidays. You guys have been good boys and girls as we dial up the great and powerful UK guru of radio, the host of the Radio Today podcast, and the namesake of Trevor Dan Productions, Mr. Trevor Dan.
Well, Merry Christmas, Larry Gifford.
Oh, Trevor, it's such a pleasure to speak with you again.
How the hell are you? I bet the weather's a bit warmer in California than it is here. Although, to be honest, it's been quite balmy for an English winter so far.
Well, this is the cold season in California, so it's low 60s. It's whew. Oh,
feel really sorry for you.
So you're here to help Radio Stuff put a bow on 2014, and you bring with you the declarative and definitive list of the top UK radio stories of the year as you see them.
Well, I have a list. I don't know whether how definitive they are, but I'll tell you what I think are the big things that went on this year. I think the most heartwarming story was the arrival of Stephanie Hurst, who started the year as Simon Hurst, very popular DJ in the north of England, some national exposure as well, doing the ILR chart show. Simon Hursty, as he's always known, was a great DJ. Stephanie Hurst will also be a great broadcaster, and I know this because yesterday I made the BBC Radio 5 Live review of the radio year with a whole bunch of people, and she was one of the panel. She was just great and completely on great form. There is, in the old cliche, a lot of love in the room for Stephanie, and she will make it. And I think we as an industry are all very proud of her.
Oh, that's really cool. What a great story. And she spoke at Next Radio as Simon. Just months later, she came out.
Indeed she did. And, she talked so passionately about how radio has always been her obsession. And in this review of the year, she said to Jane Garvey of Radio 4, she said, maybe radio was how I hid myself. Maybe I just escaped into radio. And I thought that was such a powerful thought for a lot of us who are obsessed by the radio, And then Jane said, I'm at my calmest when I'm presenting a radio show, because all the rest of the stuff in my life just goes away. And I thought, there will be a lot of people listening to this who are maybe presenters, but also producers, backroom people who will sympathize and empathize with that.
Now, as the crusty old veteran in the room, as you look at that Stephanie Hurst story, are you surprised with the way the industry reacted to it?
Well, I'm not surprised that everybody I ever have met in the business thinks it's a great story and it's very heartwarming, and they wish her every success. What does surprise me is what her employers have done, having let her go off air, and that, you know, she wasn't sacked, but, you know, she wanted to have some time off, which, you know, she's had. They seem very reluctant to let her come back, and extremely reluctant to let her go and work for anybody else. So she's still under contract. Now, if I was Global Radio and I had an asset like that, a great broadcaster with the most phenomenal human interest story, I'd stick her straight back on the air. You know, yeah. I'd be ringing up saying, Steph, please come back, please come back. Now, she is saying, well, I'm not sure I really want to, but I think, you know, with a little bit of persuasion, she'd be only too pleased to get back on air and maybe not doing her old show, but doing something similar. And I think she'd be an absolute massive hit. And you can tell on social media, there's a huge desire amongst Hursty's old fans to have him slash her back.
Yeah, well, now's the time. I mean,
exactly.
The buzz is there.
I can't believe that Global Radio, Capital Radio's owners, don't think this is a fantastic, you know, just piece of high-profile PR, you know, even on that level, you know, even if it wasn't something that they felt they should do for Stephanie's sake. I would have thought that even from the most appalling kind of bean-countery perspective, you'd say, no, frankly, there's money in this, there's profile in this.
What's your next story?
Well, my next story is slightly less heartwarming, and it's the news that broke in the last few weeks that the Radio Academy, which, of course, full disclosure, I used to be the chief executive of, is in trouble. And unless they can find a way out of the financial problem they find themselves in, there will be no Radio Academy. And there certainly is not, at the moment, going to be another radio festival. And you know what a big thing that is in the UK. And there won't be any more Radio Academy Awards. Now, you know, we can all manage without, you know, an occasion where we have to get the old dinner jacket on, you know, and look like Fred Astaire for 3 hours and eat ghastly food and you know, spend £200 or £300 for the privilege. We can all do without that. But underlying this problem is the fact that the UK radio industry is not working as closely together in some areas as it used to. And that's probably because there used to be, once upon a time, the BBC, big monolith, had half the audience, and then maybe 10, 12 little groups who owned a few radio stations. Well, now that 10 or 12 has been whittled down over the past decade or so, so there's only really two. One of them, Bauer, is still quite interested in the Academy, and the other one, Global, frankly, is not. And that's really where the problem is. And I think, sorry to pick on them again, but I think it's another lack of judgment. I think, you know, we need an organisation like this that brings everybody together, that acts as glue. But I knew this would, I kind of had a feeling this would happen the very first time I met Ashley Tabor, who runs Global Radio, when I was still running the Radio Academy. I said to him, well, you know, we're all in the same business, aren't we, Ashley? And he said to me, well, that's where you're wrong, Trevor. No, we're not. And I thought, oh no. We've got an issue here. Because it seems to me that, you know, you might be funded by a license fee, I might be funded by an advert, but actually we're both making radio. And he just didn't see it that way. And I think he's not been shaken out of that view. And that's why what's left of the Academy, and there is really only, you know, one person left because the staff, full-time staff, were all fired. I think they will really struggle to find anything that will get Global back into the big sort of UK radio family, which is a great shame.
That's a shame. Now, what is going to be the legacy of the Radio Academy?
Well, I think it's maybe and I'm going to be a bit negative here. I think maybe it's had its time, you know. There's something rather quaint and old-fashioned about an organisation called the Academy in the same way as the Royal Academy of Art, because that word Academy is now used so often to mean a place where you go to learn something. You know, there's a, you know, Global Radio have their own academy, Bauer have an academy, the BBC have an academy. So I don't think the word means very much relevant anymore. And, you know, handing out fellowships and, you know, as I said before, wearing your tux out to an evening, it all feels a little bit last century. And my own view, for what it's worth, is that we probably would be best putting it out of its misery and inventing something else that starts not from the top down with big organisations paying lots of money, but from the bottom up, you know, in a much more modern Facebooky, Kickstarter-y kind of way, saying, right, well, I'll put in a fiver if you put in a tenner kind of thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, let's invent an organisation for radio professionals or basically people interested in radio that's independent of those big groups, you know, that is not owned by them. And, you know, frankly, Gary, Larry, maybe it should be international. You know, who says that it wouldn't be better, you know, given the sort of relationships that, you know, you and I have and James Cridland has trotting around the world and we all go to Radio Days Europe and, you know, it begins to feel as the world gets smaller that yeah. radio perhaps ought to have some sort of global organisation, you know, a sort of radio society of the world, as it were. Well, maybe, so I think maybe its time is done.
Maybe that's a goal for us next year, Trevor. We could invent that.
Well, we perhaps we could. Larry and Trev's Radio Society. Everybody would want to join.
Why wouldn't they? Well, I mean, I just want to point out to the listeners that you've already invented something. You invented an adjective called Kickstartery.
Oh, did you like that?
I like that. Okay. What is your next story?
My next story is actually applaud it for the aforementioned Global Radio. They have a speech station called LBC, which has been based in London and covering London stories only since its start. It was, in fact, the first British commercial radio station back in 1973. This year it went national on digital radio, DAB. They now make LBC stand for Leading Britain's Conversation. But what they've done is they've got in politicians to do their own phone-ins. Could have been the kiss of death, this, but has turned out to be marvellous radio. The Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, was the first. He does a show called Call Clegg. The Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, does a show called Ask Boris. Now, Nigel Farage is on regularly doing his own phone-in, answering listeners' questions. These programmes have made the political agenda. They've been agenda-setting and they've raised LBC's profile hugely this year. So well done, James Rea, who runs it. Well done, Global Radio, in this instance. And hello, BBC. You know, there's something going on here and maybe you should see what you can do to catch up.
Well, yeah, it's really interesting. We've featured LBC on the podcast, the Radio Stuff podcast, quite a bit this year because they have so many interesting things going on. I'm a big fan, and it's good to see that it's able to take what it created there in London and expand it onto the national platform.
I think American consumers of talk radio might find it a bit soft, actually, because even James O'Brien, one of the feistier presenters, is, if you like, held back by the regulation that we have here. But I think what that does mean is that the politicians go on these shows because they know that at the end of the day, they will get their voice heard. The regulation does require the presenters to give them a bit of room. You know, I mean, if Barack Obama went on, you know, Rush Limbaugh's show, he'd never get a word in, would he? you know, and so I think in that sense, that's why they feel safe enough. But my word, they need a thick skin to get away with, you know, to put up with some of the questions that are put to them, not just by the presenters, but by the actual listeners. So it's good stuff.
What is a another UK radio headline of 2014, Trevor?
Okay, this is number 4 of 5. It's the old story, really, of yet more radio syndication. As I mentioned, we're really down now to 2 groups. There's a third one called UTV, which has a few stations. But really, Global and Bauer have split the cake between them. And these brands like Capital Radio and Heart, which started off as local brands, are becoming national. Just this week, there's a story that we covered in the Radio Today programme, which is about how Premier Christian Radio is being kicked off the main national multiplex. In other words, digital radio listeners throughout the UK will not be able to hear it anymore following a date sometime next year, because Global want to launch something called Heart Extra, you know, another radio station jukebox. And that's the continuing story of the year. You know, the BBC is sticking with the brands it's got, and commercial radio is increasingly trying to match them and compete with them, not through doing local and regional radio, but by rolling out these big national brands and hoping that they get engagement, you know, and therefore can sell advertising throughout the country. It's a cheap option. It's asset stripping from some people's point of view. Does it provide more choice, which is what all this digital stuff was meant to do? Not sure it does, really. So it's a bit negative, but it is what's happening, and so we have to report it.
All right, so what's the final headline of the year, Trevor?
The final headline of the year starts in the United States. It's the 10th anniversary this year of podcasting.
Yay!
Hey, and didn't we do well? podcasting, the word, was invented by an Englishman, actually, called Ben Hammersley, who was writing an article in The Guardian, and he just wanted a word for online radio that people downloaded onto their iPods, and he came up with the word podcasting. But this year, I think we've hit the tipping point, partly because of Serial, which is the most talked about radio programme, I think, of my lifetime, even though until Radio 4 Extra started broadcasting it over here, it wasn't actually a radio programme at all. It was only a podcast. And the other story that's come out of that world is Radiotopia, which is Adam Marz's Kickstarter campaign, with colleagues like Helen Zaltzman from over here. He's raised nearly $700,000 to invent what amounts to a podcast radio station. Wow. And he's going to invest this money in lots of his friends and other people he admires to help them become professional podcasters. Now, $700,000 is a lot of money, and that's going to really shake up that world of online and on demand, and I'm really, really excited by it. And as you can imagine, you know, we speak as podcasters. Larry, have you got a number for Roman? You know, give him a ring. We'll have some of that.
Yeah, spread the wealth here. Come on.
Yeah, don't hold it all in, Roman. But I think that's very, very exciting. I've loved Serial. I think it's, you know, one of the most exciting things that's been done in a very long time. I don't know whether they'll keep it up, but I think finding a way for the public who consume this stuff to give money to pay for, to support programming they want to listen to, is wonderfully democratic. And I support it hugely, and I think it might mean, as the years go by, that there'll be more and more fantastic and exciting and innovative audio ideas out there.
All right, so that wraps up the 2014 headlines out of the UK radio biz. But I want to ask you, Trevor, do you have any inklings of what may come in 2015?
Absolutely none at all. And that's because all I ever do is ask James Cridland.
Well, he is a futurologist.
He is a futurologist. That's his job. And so I'm not going to tread on his toes. I may say, actually, let me just do a plug, and it is relevant. This radio review of 2014 that I was just talking about, Will be up on the BBC iPlayer, and whether that's available to all of your listeners, I'm not sure, but it's going out on Christmas Day and it'll be up for another 30 days after that. But it does actually include James Cridland's five ideas from around the world. I got him to actually go on the air and do a piece about great stuff that he's heard throughout, you know, his travels. And, you know, I think, to summarise James's view, and it would be mine, is that the big story of next year will carry on being the migration of radio into different platforms. You know, the old days of the transmitter and the radio set, well, they're on their way out, and new ways of engaging with our audiences will be what we're all looking for. And, you know, some of the old skills that you and I grew up with are as valuable as they ever were, but they're going to have to be parlayed into a different environment. I mean, for instance, the new editor of Radio 1 Newsbeat has counterintuitively has said, you know what, people have got a longer attention span than we thought, young people. So instead of doing tightly edited packages where nobody breathes, what we're going to do is let it just hang out a bit, you know, a bit more kind of serial like. Let it develop. Let people, you know, enjoy a conversation, a debate, an argument. Well, great. You know, let's move back towards some of that stuff. That'd be terrific.
That'd be awesome. Well, hey, Trevor, I hope you have an awesome New Year, and really,
thank you so much.
We'll be listening for you on the Radio Today program.
Excellent, thank you.
And we'll be catching up with you again in 2015.
Well, I think, let me tell you that there is one interesting thing that's going to happen next year, which is the launch of something called Upload Radio. And Upload Radio is going to be on several multiplexes digitally in the UK, but also on the internet, so it'll be available all around the world. And the idea of it will be that you make a show, you pay £20, so that's about, what, $30, for your hour, and you can broadcast anything you like, so long as it's, you know, not defamatory and it can be complied, to use that awful word. So I'm thinking that we should do a joint Radio Today program / Radio Stuff show and put it up on a proper radio thing. So that's my ambition for 2015, Larry.
I'm in. Tell me when to show up.
All right. Well, you have a happy Christmas too. It's great talking to you.
So you're probably wondering about the top U.S. radio stories. Good question. And the good news is Trevor and I talk about that too. But for that conversation, you're going to need to listen to the Radio Today program. See what we did there? A little cross promotion. People helping people. Hands across the ocean. I did ask folks on Twitter what they thought the top story of the year was, and answers varied from the continuing decline of the talk radio ratings to serial podcasts, Nash icon formats taking over, being number one, Clear Channel rebranding, and as Trevor mentioned, the Radio Academy shakeup. And I'll go over some of my top stories from 2014. I think a big story was the classic hip-hop creation of a format. I love that we're still innovating. The evolution of the digital dash, the continuing evolution of the digital dash, like that, we're still talking about it. There's half the people in radio get it, and half the people in radio are like just praying the radios keep getting installed in cars. NPR was the media darling. The public radio sort of took the nation by storm. I know it's been popular for a long time, but just like this year, it's felt different for me. From their website and their app to Serial, Carl Castle's retirement, and the death of Car Talk's Tom Moyazzi. It's like, you know, the old and the new. And I don't know, there's something about the year that public radio had that really intrigued me. Clear Channel rebranding to iHeartMedia, I think, was a big deal, as big a deal as trying to shed its $22 billion in debt. And then there's the bizarre, weird, wild, wacky case of Casey Kasem. Kidnapped, he died, there was a post-mortem battle over his body, and it wasn't until just this week that he finally was buried in Norway. 6 months after his death, he he was finally laid to rest. What a year.
Educates, syncopates, radio communicates, radio, the sound of year-round pleasure.
So it has been a great year with really fascinating guests and thought-provoking contributors. We had serious stories about life and death things and silly stories and great radio stunts, how to handle breaking news and insights from talent on their creative process and what goes into making big decisions from a muckety-muck standpoint. I mean, we had on a ton of people, too many to name really individually. I would like to tip my cap again at my old co-host, Deb Slater. Deb, we miss you. I hope you're having a happy holiday. But we need to take some time to reflect on where we've been this past year. So I've put together a flashback to some of the highlights of the year. It's about 20 minutes long, so it's a nice car ride. Hopefully you enjoy it. Everything is the heck is happening to conservative talk radio? There has been more swapping of hosts and stations than a 1970s key party.
Oh, did you ever go to one of those?
Did I? When no, I was when four? You were four.
One of the things that I find tedious in a lot of the shows of my colleagues is you have callers going, oh, you're a great American. No, you're a great American. We're all great Americans, and we're all so right. And we're so right. Both right wing and right. I enjoy arguing with people.
It was 1973 when Vic Ratner first joined ABC News Radio, and since then he's covered every presidential campaign, political convention, inauguration, and State of the Union address, and almost every space launch.
Despite, or maybe because of the internet, because of cable news, because of the diversity of opinions on blogs and podcasts, radio, as the first critical source of news in an emergency, still remains hugely important.
You know, I suppose there was always that gnawing tension at the back of my mind that, you know, that there could be problems. There was an awful lot of talk of the security issues and everything else that could go wrong in Sochi, and touch wood so far, none of that's come to pass. And the other side of it is, you know, I'm heading off to cover the biggest event of my life so far, and there's that nervous excitement, the twitch that you get when you know something big's just about to happen.
Is it cheating if a straight woman with a boyfriend kisses one of her straight female friends?
All right, so here we are at the KISW studios. The show just ended. Here's BJ and producer Steve.
And it's really not about the topics. The topics are nice, but they're the filter that we basically shine the soul of the show through.
Well, I mean, I grew up on radio, so it's been, you know, like all, I think my generation and generations before, it's been the way I've always listened to and discover music. And I think, you know, as a musician, and when I was in bands, along with my hundreds of other fellow bands at the time, we were all trying to get on radio. So it has always been the holy grail for artists. My dream is that there'll come a time when literally the day your song gets added to Pandora, you can quit your job and get the band together and hit the road.
You could feel in the building there was some sort of like reverberation or kind of like an earthquake, very briefly.
There was a news helicopter that crashed right near the Space Needle. And I thought, oh my gosh. And then I realized Deb works over there in the Como building.
And I saw the helicopter go flying past our window. And the next thing I saw was a big black puff of smoke at the base of the Space Needle. Obviously, I'm in the newsroom. I work in the newsroom, and we all run to the window and see a helicopter up in flames, two or three cars, fuel going down the street. And I'm on the fence as to what to do. What do I do? I'm watching this happen.
I thought, well, either I carry on doing what I'm doing, and I just wait to end up on some horrible adult contemporary station and then get fired. Or else I do something that can give other broadcasters a place to go and can create opportunity for people and give the audience, more importantly, an experience they might not ever have had before.
I love Hugh Jackman. Oh, who doesn't? Do? Who doesn't? Come on. Look at him.
Overrated.
You think?
No, I think he's sexy. All right, so Deb, this is the time I've been dreading.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Today is Deb's last day co-hosting the Radio Stuff podcast. We're good?
It's all good.
I didn't say anything?
No.
That's what my wife said. She goes, what did you say to her? No, I'm like, I didn't say anything.
No.
Deb Slater, it's Tom Likas.
Wow.
And what is this, 47 episodes of the Radio Stuff podcast? Listen, I've enjoyed your work. Best of luck, Deb.
Oh.
How do you feel you've been treated by radio?
Way better than I deserve. I mean, like, and that's considering that I've been fired and laid off and, you know, I mean,
I didn't do that.
No, you did not, Larry. Not at all. And to the people who reassigned me to not having a show on the radio station, I don't begrudge them either, because I mean, the thing about radio, and you know this very well, is that, a commercial radio is still, I think, about broadcasting, and I'm really interested in narrowcasting.
If I find myself staring at a blank piece of paper, I get up and leave, because that's poison. The only commentaries that are any good are the ones that essentially write, that are no work, the ones that write themselves. And I find the key to that is to have formed a theme or a take in your mind before you start writing anything.
Do you look towards radio as a source of entertainment?
For a little bit longer, but eventually it'll go away.
So the fans now, they don't want the tired old, you know, come to this county fair and come and watch whatever show, you know, do their show. They want to know what's in it for them. What can I get at this show? Are you giving me an opportunity to win tickets to a game where I want to go to? Are you giving away free samples of, you know, food or prizing, whatever that may be? Are you going to give me content and bring guests, live guests, that I can take pictures of and hopefully have a chance to meet and get an autograph from, that make it worth my time to come over and, you know, be a part of that show and be a part of that energy, which obviously from a content standpoint, you know, you really want when you're on the road.
The big thing for me was like transmedia. Think transmedia. You know, it's like we have to appreciate that the internet is really, it is a new kind of media. It's absolutely its own distinct kind of media that has to be respected in its own right and treated for its unique qualities. But it's also all media. It's TV, it's movies, it's video games, it's radio, it's text, it's the record store, it's the recording studio, it's, you know, a magazine, a newspaper, video conferencing. We're using it as a telephone right now. You know, a radio studio, it's the library, it's the mall, it's the university, right? It's everything. And, you know, sometimes it strikes me funny. It's like, here's this medium that really is all media. And all we seem to think about doing with it is trying to get people to stop using it and come back to the radio station. You know, we keep using it to remind people like, hey, they, you know, I know you're on social media, but don't forget to come back to the radio.
Young people will go anywhere to get the content they want. They go to YouTube, they go to websites you've never heard of. They go to various streams and podcasts you've never heard of. If the content is there, people will go. I mean, who was Mark Maron 5 years ago?
I admire what you're doing, man. You're a pioneer, okay? I mean, in my day, we were cowboys, all right? But we needed a rancher, man. We needed some big, fat, rich guy who owned a spread. You are a lone ranger, okay? You control your own destiny. We couldn't do that.
So wait, am I a pioneer or am I the lone ranger? Because either way, you got to update your metaphors.
And what's amazing is when a guy like Robin Williams is so depressed that he kills himself, that Robin Williams wasn't able to see that he was Robin Williams. I mean, you really got to think about that for a second. Think about how crazy a disease alcoholism is and depression is, that Robin Williams couldn't look in the mirror and see what we saw.
Reporters are being told to stop filming and to stop recording and put down your cameras. Al Jazeera America was tear gassed, setting up a live shot. There's video online of it. Two journalists were arrested. And I'm not sure if I'm mad, sad, or horrified.
Not a shaking, not even a rolling, just pounding.
And at what point did your thoughts start going to the radio station?
Well, once your brain gets unscrambled, I would say that might have taken me 5 minutes or so just to kind of process what had happened. Then you kind of go, oh, man, okay, now we got to go to the radio station. And so, yeah, within 5 minutes or so, I was dressed and on my way in.
What'd you find when you got there?
Well, I found a dark building, which was very discouraging because we have, you know, we're prepared for this kind of thing here. We have a generator that's supposed to kick on in a power outage. And, in fact, our transmitter generators did kick in, and both our AM and FM transmitters were on. But the studios were dark. And so here it is, the middle of the night. You're already jangled. and you're approaching a dark building that you know is going to be a mess inside. And it was a creepy experience, I have to tell you, to come in here at that time.
Social media is not an unrestricted playground. There are rules, and these rules are very ill-defined. But I've always said, Larry, there are rules, and there's a certain behavior that is required by brands. And oftentimes, people post what they think is funny. But what I am finding more and more is what may seem funny to you as an admin on a Facebook page really may be offensive when it's expressed as your radio station's voice. We cannot project our individual beliefs or our sense of humor if we are speaking on behalf of a radio station. But I will walk 500 miles and I will walk 500 more. The feet of man walk 5,000 miles and fall down at
your door. Hang on. I'm gonna stop this song. I'm gonna stop it. Not having that.
What's going on?
The Scots have been winding me up this week. You know, we're so close to the end of the United Kingdom as we know it, and then we have to play that, you know, Scottishness.
Yeah, we were expecting to get noticed. Really, if you know, to be totally honest, we're expecting Bob FM to get noticed, and that's what it's all about.
I'm not working in an industry that's going to hell in a handcart. And that's a very positive and slightly unusual thing to say after one of these conferences where you often, and you've been to them, I'm sure, come away thinking, we're finished, we're done. And I got a real sense of confidence and optimism and just that very refreshing lack of hand-wringing and all that kind of stuff.
Radio should be proud of its radio-ness, that radio should be proud of its audio-ness. I'm not someone saying, oh, how dare them no longer call themselves radio. But it's just one of many things that indicates a trend to me that the people in radio, and I'm not talking about the people in the trenches, the workers, the managers, the disc jockeys, the talk show hosts. I'm talking about the captains of industry. They seem hell-bent on moving out of the area that they occupy, and that is being the king of audio media.
It's now Wednesday, and the Daily Mirror have run a story with this as its headline.
Former DJ Chris Moyles warned he faces a huge tax bill after appeal bid fails.
Now, I don't normally comment on certain aspects of my personal life, as is my wont. However, I am going to comment on this because of this headline.
Former DJ Chris Moyles warned he faces a huge tax bill after appeal bid fails.
Let's just go through that bit by bit, shall we, just to show you where we are at. Former DJ Chris Moyles is the only bit of that headline which is factually correct. I am a former DJ. I am Chris Moyles.
You got to be open to innovation. You got to try you know, very different things. And then sort of the flip side piece, which is industries that stand still and don't grow are destined to fail. There is this tendency to really fixate on the software or the technology or, hey, where's radio going to be? And I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that while all of that is important, radio needs to be represented, of course, in cars in an accessible, easy to use way. But ultimately, it is down to our content. And I know that sounds so cliche, but that really is the reality because, as Larry Rosen called it last year, the connected car sort of introduces a barrage of new. And so I think every program director and brand manager, cluster manager really needs to think about not just the other radio stations down the dial that you have traditionally competed against, but when people get in their connected cars and they have all these other options, what is it about your radio station, your morning show, your brand that will make people want to still seek out what it is you do?
Brave. Brave? Brave. Brave is the word I've been scrambling for. It's the best word I can find to describe how I feel about the Stephanie Hurst story.
I've seen a document that says that your former employer did not think it was appropriate for the subject of gender reassignment to be discussed on any of your shows. The phrase I read was that it was not commercially viable content for either of the shows that you present. So they weren't keen on you talking about it on air.
As I say, there's nothing else I can usefully add to that. There's nothing. You know, there's documents, you know, that in all our lives that say private and confidential, and that's it.
So what are the plans for the future?
You know, I never felt like I wanted to travel the world because I thought, I should really travel the world. I should really see places. I can't be bothered. But now I want to. I want to do things. I want to see things. I want to. I just feel like I'm alive. And that's, I know I repeat myself, but that's the one word. I sum it up in one word, alive.
That's really cool.
But none of this was a reason for why talk radio is committing suicide. That's not the case. It's not committing suicide. I do think, though, that there are some people that want to move the format from this hard-edged news and opinion approach and do more fun talk, more lifestyle talk, and more goofy talk, like, you know, space aliens coming from Mars.
Well, yeah, but I think there's a middle ground between goofy talk and political talk. I think there is a middle ground there that can work where I don't think every day in everybody's life they're talking about things through a political filter. They're talking about things through their life filter.
I'm not one of the people who thinks that political talk has no place anymore. But I also think it needs to be in context of the way people live their lives. And I look at what people are doing in talk radio and I hear what's going on, and I just feel like it doesn't really connect with regular life, and it really doesn't appeal to anybody who isn't retired and doesn't have a lot of time to obsess over what Fox News and MSNBC are talking about.
Oh, God. Come on, snap out of it, will you? You're on National Public Radio. Get a hold of yourself, boy.
It's too close. I can't see anyone.
Tom Moyatsi, one half of NPR's Car Talk duo Click and Clack, the Tappet brothers, has died at the age of 77.
You know, the unique thing about him is that, you know, his view of the world was really, really positive. You know, and I think whether listeners could articulate that or not, I think they recognize that this was a guy who was pulling everyone up rather than taking everyone down.
Wow. Thanks for giving me advance notice of that question, Larry. I'm very grateful.
Just take your time. We're waiting.
Yeah.
We're all huddled by our radios.
But you see, that's the good thing about a podcast, because it's as long as it needs to be.
Alpha Media is using the Heritage Talker KXL Portland as a testing ground for dispatching drones over the city to better, or at least differently, cover breaking news and traffic.
Who's behind the controls? You know, it's not like we're giving it to a part-timer and saying, hey, why don't you fly the drone? You
know, this is... We like to use that PPM data to look for the nuggets that stand out. An example being a song like If You Want to Get to Heaven by Ozark Mountain Daredevils. Not a big song in classic rock in 2014, but we play it quite a bit because people go, oh, that song with the harmonica and the foot stomping harmonica song with the, you know, it kind of sounds like a Southern Fleetwood Mac song.
So you're still discovering new music even though you're the classic rock corner.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It's really cool.
All right, so I'm here to confess, I am a fan of the Serial podcast. I know. You wouldn't think that sort of thing would be controversial, but apparently this week it is. I wrote a blog piece about Serial called Don't Be a Serial Hater. I'm imagining the influence this podcast can have on radio. I think it can influence the future of audio communication. I can hear a whole new wave of personal journalism on news talk radio stations, or even sports talk radio stations, or morning shows. I can imagine newscasts with a more familiar, intimate tone.
Even if you've got what some people would say would be the mundane chore of doing sports updates, do that, but put a quarter turn on what's mundane and make it less, you know, put some Tabasco on it and it's no longer mundane.
You know, my hope each week is that we can put a little Tabasco on the stories making news in the radio industry. You know, we talk to the influencers and the content creators and spotlight the high points of radio and try to make sense of radio's low points, put things in context. And really, you know, I really enjoy doing this. I really enjoy talking about radio. Radio is a passion of mine. It's a passion of yours, or you wouldn't still be listening to this damn thing. But I do want to thank you. Take a minute to just thank you. Many of you email and contribute. You suggest topics or guests. You add insight. You give me knowledge that I didn't have before. And you're listening. You're just taking the time to download the podcast and put on your headphones and listen. It means a lot to me, and I really appreciate you. And I hope you have the best holiday season. And I look forward to talking to you some more in 2015. You can email me at radiostuffpodcast@gmail.com. And I guess that's it for Radio Stuff this year. Read my blog at larrygifford.com and think of me if you're in need of a radio consultant or a talent coach. Find more Radio Stuff at radiostuffpodcast.com. Have fun, be creative, support each other, and share your radio stuff.